Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and you are listening and watching to The Leadership Enigma. And listen, it's time to bring some joy to life. So with that, I'm going to be talking to the wonderful Donna Easton, who is a joyologist. Now, you might be asking the question, what is a joyologist? Well, let me tell you, we are going to find out today exactly what that means. Please like and subscribe. The YouTube channel has now got 200 videos on it. We don't want it to be the best kept secret. So help us build the community and help us build the opportunity. And we'll also be releasing our details for our special guest at the live episode 200. Who knew that would even be a thing? But this episode is all about joy. Come back to me just after this break. Hi, I'm Adam Pacifico, and welcome to The Leadership Enigma, a world-ranked, award-winning podcast that's insatiably curious as regards what leaders do, how they do it, and importantly, why. We'll delve into the human doing, but even deeper into the human being and the power of human-centered leadership to drive sustainable change. So whether you're an entrepreneur, business owner, corporate executive, each week we speak to global experts, academics, rising stars, ambitious upstarts and disruptors, as together we will discover that success leaves clues. Donna, it's a massive warm welcome to the Leadership Enigma. How are you doing?
I'm very well. Thank you for having me. This is wicked.
Now, you've had a bit of a reaction to the studio, I think, haven't you?
It's very, very schmancy, Adam.
I like that word. We take it for granted, but it's always lovely when someone comes in and kind of goes, ooh, this is a little different.
Feels very grown up. I'm very terrified.
Well, very terrified. Grown up probably isn't the word that people might associate with me. We'll go from
that. Yeah, definitely don't associate grown up with me.
Listen, thank you. I'm always really grateful for people coming to the studio, and it's always wonderful to have a face-to-face conversation. A joyologist. Let's start with that, because anyone listening or watching is going to be thinking, well, I love the word, but I may not have heard the word before. What's a joyologist?
A joyologist is somebody who is absolutely obsessed with happiness, feelings, the things that make us happy, the things that we can do to raise our barometer for happiness, raise our barometer for joy. I honestly thought I'd made it up.
Nothing wrong with that.
To fill a gap, really. Yep. Made it up to fill a gap, and not just any gap. A gap that I could see quite clearly was something that the world was struggling with, which was just a kind of mareness about life and about work and about living. And certainly it was in response to that. It was very much in response to that. Then I found a couple of others in the US, and but then I created Joyology, which is my brand, and it's all kind of grown and evolved and kind of taken its own shape, really, which is just gorgeous.
Well, I kind of love that a joyologist is all about exactly that, the fun, the happiness, and the joy in life. Let's be honest, life can be a little brutal sometimes, yeah. And sometimes we have no control over that. And when we talk to so many leaders who are fulfilled in what they do, but they also talk about the significant pressure on them and their people and their business almost every day.
Absolutely. And I think it's critical for me to say, right at the beginning of anything I do,
yep,
that this isn't toxic positivity. This isn't glossing over the feelings that we get as human beings. This isn't saying,
yep,
oh, we can all be joyful 100% of the time, because it's just, A, it's not sustainable. We'd go nuts. And also, people would think we were a little bit weird. And yeah, so we...
That's okay too, by the way.
Right. But we are going to roll up and down with life and life's punches and the things that we get thrown at us. And it's how we respond to that and how we build a baseline of happiness and a baseline of joyful self.
I love that idea of building a baseline, because let's be honest, challenges and bad things happen to us all. It's inevitable. And actually they need to happen, because we have to build up the emotional ability, capability, and the resilience to get through these. So I suppose it's like how we learn, is even as kids, we've got to fall off the bike.
Right.
In order to understand. So there has to be a balance. There'll inevitably be a balance. But tell me a little bit more about this baseline. I like this idea of baseline of joy.
I kind of think about it as our barometer, really.
Yep.
So if we have a if we have a higher barometer for happiness, and that's our set point, that's the point that we live at, right? If that's our set point, the bad stuff will happen and will come inevitably. It's going to. The challenges will come. The days when we're feeling rubbish will come. The things, life will happen and throw the stuff at us. But if we come back to this baseline of something that's slightly elevated, our baseline, it makes us a little bit more unknocker-overable and makes us a little bit more resilient to that stuff. And so for me, it was about what can I do for my brain, for my life, for my surroundings, for my reality, that I can build that baseline to somewhere that's more joyful, that's more happy. And actually, I've trained my brain to look for the positives in everything. And actually, I can't walk down the street now without seeing the beauty of the spring coming and the beauty of the birds building a nest and a beauty of my daughter, the way the sunlight catches her hair. I just can't not see those things now. And so the baseline is there. Now, I know that the bad stuff's going to happen. I know that because I'm living a human experience and it's life. But I also know that the birds are still building their nests, and I also know that the ladybirds are still doing their thing, and I also know that the good stuff is there as well. And so it is that
finding that balance.
Yeah.
A number of people may be thinking to themselves, okay, so you are a joyologist, and that is your pursuit now, and you're helping as many people as possible. We'll come on to how you can help people start to understand and work on their own baseline of joy. But there's always a history behind that. So I want to find a little bit more about you up until the point that you decided that this was going to be the direction of travel for you. So tell everyone a little bit about you, because you didn't start as a joyologist.
No, I didn't. Well, interestingly enough, there are a few people that when I sort of announced that this was what I was now doing, they were like, oh yeah, you've always been that. And I was like, oh really? But the truth is that I haven't always been the happiest person in the room. Without going deeply into it, there's trauma in childhood. There was a yearning to be a performer that didn't quite work. And when I eventually did go to an audition where they offered me the job, I did the audition on the Thursday. I got offered the job on the Friday. And then by the end of the following week, most of my hair had fallen out. And so I was faced with then going abroad, away from my family, away from my support network, with a bunch of people. And I was meant to be standing on stage every night. And at that point, I was facing doing it with like no hair or patches. And so that was traumatic. That led to, I bought a wig at that time and kind of went and did the season wearing a wig. Now, wigs 20, this was when I was 20.
What was behind that?
So it's alopecia, but I think right. if I use my pop psychology summation of what happened, I think I'd always wanted to perform, and I'd never believed I was good enough to do it.
Is this your big break then?
It was
a step in the right direction.
It was a step in the right direction. And I think it was massive validation that actually I could do something like that and be, someone was going to offer me a job doing it and someone was going to pay me money for doing it. Okay. Right. So it was this kind of
get serious then, doesn't
right,
it?
Right. Exactly. And so all of this lack of self-belief and this lack of who I was and this terror that they'd made an awful mistake casting me. I don't know if that was just a massive shock to my system. It was like a, you want it? Here it is. And try and do it with no hair. Ha ha, see how you get on. And so it felt like this, just this huge emotional shift in who I was, but also this actual physical and real assault to my system, to my immune system.
Was this just a bad coincidence, or do you think from a physiological point of view, these were linked?
I believe they were linked.
The imposter syndrome that sometimes kicks in, the, okay, you want it, you've got it, and then you suddenly think, wow, I'm in the reality. And so do you think it may well?
I believe they were linked. Now, at the time, I asked questions. I got, you know, I was I've sought doctors, you know, went advice, went to trichologists, and I went mad trying to find something that would help me and that would grow my hair back instantly. Hair doesn't grow very fast.
No.
And so, you know, I was meant to be getting on a plane in 2 weeks' time. And yeah, I had to just wear a wig. But that triggered this. So from a base point of feeling completely like worthless, I then lost my hair, had to wear a wig, felt disgusting because wigs 20 odd years ago were not as fabulous as they are now. And that then triggered this kind of feeling of a behemoth in the middle of three tiny dancers. And that triggered disordered eating, anxiety, depression, all of this stuff that actually was at its core was based on who I am as a human being and this utter self-belief that good things don't happen to me.
And were these somehow also linked to childhood? Trauma. So there were things going on when you were younger.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
They come back almost. If they're
totally.
Not, they're not the root causes are dealt with, then they come back.
100%. Right. Because I grew up with this kind of waiting for the other shoe to drop thing.
Right.
Something good had happened, but I'd go, that was my learnt response. My learnt response as a child was, when a good thing happens, there's a payoff somewhere.
That's quite common with people, isn't it?
Right.
Oh, this things are going really well. Oh, hang on, what's coming around the corner? Mm. I'm guilty of that. And I know a lot of people are always in some ways vigilant and thinking, hang on, what's going to happen?
Well, we live our lives on some kind of weird high alert.
Why do we do
that?
It's so exhausting.
We wait for the bad stuff.
Which may never happen.
Right.
So we spend a lot of time panicking or worrying about stuff that may never manifest itself.
Yeah.
And then we miss, as you say, sometimes the simpler things in life, which are just take stock and enjoy.
I talk about happiness in this way, about the fact that we always either put it over there in front of us or we yearn for the happiness that we had behind us.
Right.
So we either say, oh, when I get the promotion, I'll be happy. When I get the house with a garden, I'll be happy. When I.
Yeah.
It's always over there. When we get there, we've already created our next version of what happiness looks like. We've then seen the next promotion.
That's unrelenting, isn't it?
And so we're constantly like striving to something that simply doesn't exist. We look back at our lives and we remember these halcyon days of when everything was brilliant and I was able to, you know, wear a bikini without caring and all of this kind of stuff that we put in our past. And actually,
we tell ourselves stories, don't we?
Right, because
we lie to ourselves.
Well, we Steven Spielberg the hell out of that stuff.
It's so true.
We create a movie.
What's going on then? Why are we doing? Why is that such a human thing?
I think because we're striving. We've been taught that if we're not striving, we're dying.
Right.
If we live in a society that sees stuff as our status. We live in a society that sees us as, if we're not the CEO, then what's our value to society? We have this odd value-based system where the CEO is so much more worthy than the carer.
Right.
And we're like, what? As human beings, once we break all that stuff down, it's all complete bull. Like we're all valid, worthy, beautiful human beings, whatever job we're doing, whatever we're doing. And so we've got caught up in this kind of, the stuff will make me happy, the money will make me happy, the title will make me happy, the stone loss in weight will make me happy. And actually it's the, if we just, you and I just go like, oh, I know podcasts aren't great for like total silence.
The people are listening again. Is it broken? Has my connection gone?
Exactly.
No, stay with us.
But if you do, just for a second, stop. And actually, I'm really looking at you now. And I've sort of come in. And then it feels a bit weird as human beings to really stare at each other.
And we've never met before.
We've never met before.
Okay.
And I'm really looking at you now. And I'm thinking to myself,
he's a strange chap.
That was my first thought.
I know, it's
but
understandable.
I said, Donna, I said.
Give him a chance.
Give him a chance.
Just a little bit. Just 5 seconds. Anyway, Donna's leaving now. Anyway, that's the end of the episode.
But I'm thinking to myself, this is cool, man.
This
is cool. This
right?
is cool. And I could be sitting anywhere right now and look around and go, there's something cool that we can see from here. Like the fact that in this building, before it was a podcast studio, it was part of a row of shops potentially, or maybe some houses, and this whole building was once a drawing on a piece of paper, and you know, someone's granddad painted the walls. And if we start to look at the world like that, we kind of go, oh, like we're surrounded by this beautiful human innovation, we're touched by nature, we're touched by all this beauty, and sometimes we just forget to stop and notice it.
Now, you've trained yourself to be this person, and some people listening and watching this might think, yeah, but is that true, or how did you do that? I just want to go back, because you talked about getting this amazing opportunity as a performer,
yeah,
which you really wanted, and then it wasn't working out. How did you deal with getting what you wanted and then it not being the reality that you hoped it would be? How do you deal with that? I don't want to put words in your mouth, the disappointment, or the sense of failure, or even just the sense of change of direction. I don't know. How did you deal with that?
It's a really beautiful question. And actually, I don't think at the time I don't think at the time I consciously did deal with it, actually.
Right.
I think I probably, and if I really analysed myself now back then, I think to myself, what I was probably doing was really cementing these grooves in my psychological makeup that I wasn't worth it, that I wasn't meant to be in that space. And these grooves were getting deeper and deeper and
right.
more difficult to kind of move out of. And it was, I think we look for evidence as human beings, don't we, that our thoughts are real. And actually, when I told myself for years
yeah.
that I wasn't good enough, then I got to the thing, got to the job, hair fell out, I was wearing a wig, I didn't feel like I could sing well enough, I didn't feel like I could dance well enough. I'm not a dancer at all, but there were definitely dance moves I had to do, and didn't think I was good enough. And so my brain was going, ha ha, told you.
Right, it's that.
Ha ha ha.
Almost self-fulfilling prophecy, or you become your own worst enemy.
Of course, of course.
The inner critic.
Yeah.
Which we've all got. How
yeah.
do you control that? Because it's very powerful. And for many, and I don't mind what they do, where they are, there's some people who are, on the face of it, very successful, also deeply unhappy.
Yeah.
But also very successful and still feeling as if they're not worthy on a day-to-day basis. That inner critic's one hell of a pain in the rear.
Yeah.
How do you control that?
We, with difficulty
yeah.
and with a lot of work, sorry, it's not an easy turn off a tap. I have named mine. Her name is Crow, and sometimes she sits on my shoulder
yep.
and I tell Crow to F off.
Right.
And she comes in and she'll say stuff like, oh, you late today for Adam's podcast. He must think you're an absolute disgrace. And then I'm like, all right, Crow, we're in London and that happens. And I just kind of flick her off. She
right.
will always come and she'll always remind me. She'll want to try and remind me
right.
that I'm not worthy of this space. She'll remind me that I'm a, you know, 40-something single mum from Southeast London, and what right have I to be
right.
calling myself a joyologist? She'll come in and kind of remind me of that stuff.
Yeah.
And I'll thank her kindly, and I'll know that she's trying to keep me safe, and sometimes I'll tell her to F off.
So you recognise, but you also, in some ways, you rationalise and then
yeah.
dismiss.
And I think once we understand that that voice is actually trying to keep us safe. The one that
so it
says,
serves a purpose.
The one that says, you do know that if you go for this job, you're not ready for this, don't you?
Right.
That's just your brain trying to keep you safe from
okay.
rejection and trauma and all of that kind of stuff. And so you can say, thank you so much. I see you've got my back.
Mm.
I see you've got my back, but
now
I've got
away.
This. But I've got this. Thank you very much. And they go,
in some ways, that's a lovely way of looking at things, because let's be honest, everyone's got the inner critic. Everyone talks about a lack of confidence or imposter syndrome, and we can call it, we can add so many labels to it. But at the end of the day, You know, you and I, when we first talked, we talked about the importance of the human being over the human doing.
Yeah.
And really embracing that. And this podcast has always been based on the human being over the human doing. I have people sat where you're sat who have achieved incredible things, but it always comes down to the human being.
Right.
Every time.
Right. And how many places, organizations, jobs, worlds have you been in where people forget that, not on a daily basis, on a minute by minute basis? They forget that they're dealing with humans.
Yeah.
And that we have a team of humans with different things about them, different gifts, different foibles, different whatever. And that's the beauty of a human being, not the thing that we should be strung up for, right?
When did you start fully focusing on the joyology element?
So I think I've always been...
Well, your friend said to you, this is not a surprise to them.
Yeah, yeah. Like, I've always been...
It's all right.
That's a bit rude, isn't it?
No, it's because we're live and
absolutely
we're informal.
Rude.
And that, yeah, I don't know, that could be important.
Well, it wasn't. It was, I was just silenced.
You know, we're not editing it out because we this is how we roll, Donna, just so you know, all right?
The little
I know.
That was like, remember to be joyful, Donna Easton.
that was the alert, the joy alert.
Hope you're not feeling miserable. What was the question?
When you started, because was this linked, was the pandemic anything to do
yeah,
with the timing?
Was.
Tell me a little bit about that. Because the
absolutely.
Pandemic was a deeply personal experience for anyone I talked to.
Yeah.
And some will say it was great. Some will say it was a disaster. Others will say I'm ambivalent. But there was a personal experience for everybody.
Yeah.
What about you?
Absolutely. For me, it was just utterly defining for me.
Tell
utterly
me
defining. I, for the first time in 25 years,
yep.
I was able to step off of a train that I'd been on that I had never any intention of being on. Right. I was head of commercial for an events section of a media company. I was doing that. I'd been head of sales and doing all this kind of commercial stuff, and there was numbers.
You're right in the middle of the corporate
right
world.
In the middle of it,
yeah.
Right? And I honestly, I'd never wanted to be on that train. I'd got a job for 6 months to tide me over.
Yeah.
And 25 years later, there I was still doing it. I'd kind of...
It's amazing how that happens to us, right?
Right. I'd got myself caught into this machine. I was a single mum. I say I was a single mum. I am and was a single mum. But I think what's really important about that and what some people don't realize about being a single parent is I was also a single income family.
Right.
And I think that one income that's coming into our flat for my daughter and I is it traps you even further because
well,
there's no one
pressure,
that says, hey, babe, you know, don't
how old,
worry.
How old is your daughter?
So she was 4 at lockdown, but she's 8 now.
Okay.
She's nearly
what a
9.
Great age. But there's pressure there, isn't there?
Right.
To having to do everything yourself.
Absolutely.
Right. In
absolutely.
The unit. Right,
and
you.
So the salaries coming in and work are brilliant and they're pretty flexible and everyone's great and we're on amazing projects. So it wasn't awful enough for me to go like, this is hideous. I'm getting out of here. It was brilliant. And my job was great. I was working at creative projects. I was doing like this great stuff.
Yep.
And this monthly salary was coming in. So honestly, I couldn't even think for a second that I could have just walked out of that. But honest to God, something underneath all of that has always like been knocking quietly on my door.
What was the
which
catalyst
is,
for you then? What is it that tipped the decision?
The catalyst was I had a moment to breathe.
During the pandemic?
Yeah.
Yeah,
I had a moment to breathe. I had a moment to stop. I had a moment with my daughter that I just... When we were walking around, it's funny I mentioned ladybirds actually because the ladybirds is in this story. I was walking around the block that we did that daily walk and Primrose, my little girl, said, oh, can we stop and look?
Name.
Oh, thank you. Can we stop and look at the ladybirds, Mum? And my muscle memory just went, oh, no, we've not got time. And then I was like, oh, yeah, the one thing we do have at the moment is time. And so we stood and we just watched the ladybirds for what felt like about an hour. We gave them names and they're just like crawling around on the wall. It was beautiful,
the simple
right?
things in
simple
life.
Simple things, right? But it was at that moment that I thought to myself, I've balled this all up. I've got this all wrong. I was leaving my house at 7 o'clock. Her dad would have come to my house to get her ready, take her to school. My parents would have picked her up from school. I'd get home
like
at about half
seven,
right? 8 o'clock, into bed, give her a little kiss. And that was my relationship with my little girl. And I just thought, this is nuts. I've got this round my neck. And so these moments during lockdown when I became, as I think a lot of us did, you know, I became obsessed with death counts, but they were just these arbitrary numbers. Like, I had no idea how many people usually died in a day.
Yes.
But I was just seeing numbers of people, how many were dying in a day then. And it was kind of
a strange time.
Right. And then we had Boris's announcements and all this stuff. And I remember the mum's WhatsApp group that I've got with the school mums, something like, oh, I've heard there are tanks coming down Sidcup High Street, blah, 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 and all this stuff. And I remember just thinking to myself, Primrose and I were watching a movie, and I thought to myself,
yeah,
what if I just took a leaf out of my little nan's book, who once said to me, oh, Donna, I won't watch the news. I'm sure if something catastrophic's about to happen, someone will knock on the door and tell me soon enough.
I love her already.
Right? So I thought, do I take a leaf out of Little Olive's book, yeah, and go say, what if I just look at my own reality and let's see what that does? And so while everyone else was buying toilet rolls and pasta and all that kind of stuff, I was buying disco balls and amp, karaoke machines, art supplies. I went like nuts on kind of let's party our way through this. And actually we did, right? But what that did and what that showed me was that I got to choose my own reality.
Yes.
It showed me a lot about what I was consuming affected how I was feeling.
I think that's
the,
so
the
true
the link
for everyone,
there that
right?
was just right there.
And
right?
I know lots of people, by the way, who still don't watch the news or read any paper because they just find it so depressing.
Right.
And distressing.
It's
in some
utterly
ways.
Distressing.
And they don't want that on a daily basis.
And I think there's a difference between going la 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 and going, right, okay, I can keep abreast of the news. I can do my bit for society. I can try and help. I can do, yeah, you know, all this stuff that we want to do and we want to do as good human beings. But actually, for me, a lot of it starts with us. It starts with our, yeah, with our homes. Was it that thing that said, I read it this morning, about the man's biggest mistake about this planet is that the thought that is the belief that someone else is going to do it, someone else is going to save it. And I think there's something in that, right, about just all of us daily, where we can make these choices daily about our home life, and we'll start there, right?
Yeah. I know you've studied happiness. You've really looked at it. And I had Nick Marks also on the show. This is a while ago now. And he did a TED Talk, and I'll put that in the links too, because I think this is a really important aspect, happiness. I saw one company advertise for a chief happiness officer.
Nice.
Yeah, it was over in the Middle East, actually. So tell me a little bit about, if you studied happiness, what do we need to know about what happiness is and how we can be more happy? I think everyone would want to be more happy, but what are we actually talking about?
I think we're talking about,
yep,
for me, a lot of it is noticing. So if we start to notice how we're living, if we start to notice our responses to things,
yes,
if we start to analyze a little bit those days where we're feeling blue and those days where we're feeling amazing, what are the things that we used to do when we were young that would light up our energy, light up our soul? Let's see if we can like bring some more of those into our world. So for me, for example, it was singing, right? I'd be the one that was kind of, yep, singing Madonna in front of the mirror. Realized that since the kind of season abroad and all that kind of stuff, and I sung in bands and that, but I'd stopped singing. I'd made a decision to myself that an post 40 something woman had no right in the world to be singing.
Is that
anyway.
Crow again?
It's Crow.
Right, okay.
Yeah, she came.
Right.
And so that's her voice, by the way. She's got like a meh-meh-meh voice. She's quite whiny.
She would have to be right.
And so I recognised that the things that made me happy and made, yep, me and lit up the person that I was, I wasn't doing them, right? I assessed all of my core values as a human being.
Right.
And saw that literally not one of them was being fulfilled on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. You know, one of my core values was family. Well, I wasn't seeing my daughter. One of my core values was love. Didn't have time for a boyfriend, like I was too busy. One of my core values was fun. No time for that either. And I wasn't having a great deal of fun. So you can see, you start to then analyze who you are as a core human being.
It's almost sabotaging yourself.
Right.
And there's a disconnect straight away because I really want these to be the values, this. And every single day it's that.
Absolutely. And it's funny when you look at a lot of company values.
Yes.
And they will say, I won't mention any names, but they'll say all these values that they have as a business. And then you go in and you go, how are you demonstrating these values?
Well, then so there's a disconnect.
That's why people leave,
by the way.
Here you are. Because if a business says to you,
yeah,
Adam, welcome to Business X. We are, one of our core values is family. And you go, beautiful, that aligns with me. That's who I am. Yeah. That is, I'm down with that. Let's go. And then they say, right, we'd like you to work every other weekend, actually, because we've got events on. And we'd also like you to, there'll probably be a monthly trip abroad where you'll be away from home for a week. Then you can see what happens, right? And then you go, well, hello.
Well, one's not congruent with the other, is it?
That family thing you told me? Yeah.
Hasn't quite manifested itself, has it?
Or they say, creativity is one of our core values. And then you sit in a meeting with someone, they say, be creative. And you go,
When you've got a comedian, you say, make me laugh. That's annoying to them as well.
Right.
I think with most, if not all, there's no mischief to this. It's just that here's the aspiration and then the reality kicks in. And no one actually stops and says, hang on, we said this and we do that. That makes no sense.
Right, exactly.
It's not congruent. And I also think the younger generation have a phenomenal incongruence radar,
mm-hmm.
which is why I think we saw a lot of people leaving organisations who said, you promised me X, you gave me Y, I'm out of here.
Absolutely. And you're also describing something which is like, it's like one of these well-being buzzwords, authenticity.
Mm-hmm.
And I hear it a lot in the well-being space. And so my kind of radar goes up when I hear a word a lot. Because I'm just like, do people just like spout in a word? But actually, I remember once we had a CEO, a new CEO, and morale had been really, really low. And this [S2] Right. [S1] this was a business years ago. Morale had been really, really low. So he did a thing where he asked all of the employees to nominate somebody who they thought could raise the morale of the business, right?
Yep.
I think about 90-odd% of the people nominated me, right? Now, yeah,
that's a clue for you straight away.
But this is the thing about authenticity, right? Because I was always the person that would be a kind of a bit of a joy raiser, but also like people knew they could come and talk to me. I'd listen to people. I would have like really deep conversations where people would be heard. And like, it was, I felt like I was doing something brilliant for the human beings, yeah. Right? The moment he said to me, okay, you're now in charge of raising morale. Every single bit of joy just like disappeared from my system because I was like, ugh, this just feels so contrived and icky.
Right.
And so I had this, and the fact that he then nicknamed me Mojo for about 3 months until I once pulled him in a meeting and just said, my name's Donna Easton and I've done it. So, there was this kind of, and it was incongruence. That's exactly what it was because the reason for wanting to raise the morale wasn't genuine. It didn't come from an authentic place. It didn't come from a place of love.
Right.
It came from a place of, oh, everyone's in a mood. I know what I'll do. We'll get someone to
unleash
put some
Donna.
Things in place. How about, it doesn't matter how much fruit you put on people's desks. If the human beings around them aren't treating you with love and respect, then, there ain't a banana in the world or, it's not going to help.
I want to ask you a question because you said that a lot of people, 90% of the people would have pointed to you and say, you're the bouncy, the joyous one and the person that people go to. Was there an element of masking going on as well, because you still had Crow on your shoulder, and or all of these beliefs that maybe you weren't fit to do the? Do you know what I mean?
Such a brilliant question.
So all these people went, you are the person who's the joyous one, but inside you're saying, so how do you marry up that authenticity piece where in some ways you can feel incongruent? And I get this, I really do, where you're the outgoing, joyous one, but you're dealing with something internal that no one else is privy to.
Honestly, Adam, that you've just made me go a bit wobbly, because that actually was exactly who I was.
Okay.
On the surface, I was the party girl, the kind of, you know, happy. Everything was like fun for me. It was a laugh. And inside, I was broken, completely broken. So I was going home and or going out too much, partying too much. It was like I was trying to numb anything and everything. I was trying to numb this kind
but no
of
one's seeing
bubbling,
this.
But no one's seeing that.
You're enduring it.
Yeah.
How do you get out of that? Because that is a state as well where in some ways you're lying to yourself.
Yeah.
You're internalizing it all.
Mm.
And then you're giving all of what you have to other people, not for yourself.
I would advocate for therapy. I've done a lot of therapy in my life. I would also advocate for finding space and a moment to come back to you. I think I spent most of my life looking for validation, looking for people that would tell me I was good at what I was doing, looking for people that would tell me I was funny enough, I was this enough, I was that enough.
Were these the wrong people as well?
It didn't matter, actually. It didn't matter.
Anyone.
Could have been if my mum told me, that's one thing. But, you know, anyone, really, anyone. If someone told me that I was doing something well, that was a good day for me. If someone told me I was, I needed to up my game here, like, that would devastate me. And actually, what I've done subsequently is build a baseline of self-love, self-worth, self-respect. And so, if you came at me, there's not a lot you could say to me that, and I'm not saying that it wouldn't wobble me because
you're human.
Because I'm human. But there's not a lot that you could say to me that would really affect the makeup of who I am.
Okay.
I wouldn't take it in too deeply. And I think a lot of that comes with listening to that voice that's ourself.
What's the evidence for it? In some ways, you're listening to Crow and you're thinking, well, hang on, what's the evidence for it?
Right.
Oh, there's none.
Right.
So in some
ways, do I really need to go out and get on it with, you know, in the local pub after work tonight? Like, is that really good for my system? Is that really good for my soul? Is that really good for me? And there's no, this doesn't come from a judgy place. It just comes from a place of, we all know as human beings that we can enjoy bits and bobs. We can have fun. We can, you know, we can eat the pizza. We can not exercise for a couple of days. We can sit and binge Netflix. We know that we can numb to that, right? But if we're always doing it, that's when I would ask that people have a look at why and what they're numbing, and just have a look at themselves and think, actually, is there something else I could be doing right now that would just be a bit more fulfilling? Yeah. I think our brains, we're just addicted to these little fake dopamine hits that we're getting constantly.
That is also an episode in itself. I'm sure as people are watching and listening to this, this is going to resonate with people on a deeply human level. But there's going to be a question that everyone's asking, say, look, you have made a massive shift. How have you done that? And I know that you're, I know you're working with businesses now all the time, and you have your elated system. I think there are six steps.
There are
to this.
Steps.
I think we need to share these, even at a basic level, and then we can share in the show notes and point people to learn more. But how can people do this? What is the elated system and the six steps?
So there's one thing that sits above the six steps, which is gratitude. Gratitude for me is something that I think is so simple. It feels so simple, and our human brains don't like simple very much. We like to overcomplicate things.
Yes.
And so when you hear that by writing three things down that you're grateful for every morning will truly change, has the potential to change your life, people go, nah, don't believe it for a second, Dons. You're on.
You went to South London then, on me.
That's what they say. They're like, do what? And yeah. So, yeah. And but actually, it was life changing. It's proven to be game changing. It shifts the neural pathways in our brains, and it's writing every morning three things that we're grateful for.
Okay.
Now it sounds easy, but some people don't find that easy. And so to help, I would start with. I always have my number one, which is Primrose. Like, she's my first gratitude.
Your daughter.
My daughter, yes. Yeah. Now, I then realised that if I was just going, number one, Primrose, number one's in the bag, easy yeah. peasy, I thought that wasn't really giving my brain a huge amount of work to do. And so now it's Primrose, the way she laughs, or the fact that Primrose and I had a fun time yesterday,
so
or the fact
more
so
detail
some
behind
more
it.
Detail
gotcha.
Behind
okay.
it. I then would go to thing number two, which is something around me that I can see. So I'm grateful that I've woken up in a safe, cozy bed this morning. I'm grateful that I've opened my eyes this morning because, quite frankly, millions of people didn't. I'm grateful that there's milk in the fridge. I'm grateful. So yeah. something that I can see that's tangible.
Things we take for granted.
Things we take I for know. Granted. And the third one, I just love a wild card. So I
Go
would
on.
Love something. And this just appeals to my sense of playfulness and idiotness, basically, which is, you know, I'm grateful for the way that hippopotamuses eat their food. I'm grateful for the way that giraffes, I'm grateful that giraffes exist in the world. I'm grateful the way cats do. Quite animal-based, all of those ones. But you know what I mean. But
I just there was a theme building.
But just something that is makes your brain think a little bit more playfully
okay.
as well.
So three things you're grateful for every morning.
Yep, every morning.
I've spoken to some other guests as well. We've talked about the power of gratitude,
yep.
and it's something that we really don't practice.
Absolutely.
And so that sits above the six steps?
That sits above the six steps.
What are the six steps?
The
then?
Six steps. So it's the elated system. So
yep.
E is energy. How are we showing up? How are we not showing up for other people, but also how are we showing up for ourselves? How are we making our daughter's sandwich in the morning? How are we walking down to the train station
right.
in the morning? How are we feeling like we've got this internal soundtrack of guilty pleasures playing in our mind that just gives us a spring in our step?
Little swagger.
How are we, like, you know the feeling? I love to describe it as the feeling that we have on our birthday.
Right.
You know that feeling that
it
you have?
It was my son's 18th last night.
Right.
Yeah,
so,
he had to get a little swagger in his
Of course you do, because on your birthday you do it. You do the seemingly mundane and boring normal thing. So you'll go, flat white, please. And the guy will go, yep, here you go. It's £3 something. And you'll go, thank you very much. And pay for it. And then you walk off. But it gives you that bit of swag. You're right.
It's quite infectious as well, isn't it? When,
right,
when someone's like
brilliant.
That, you're thinking, well, they're a little perky.
Yeah. And what's lovely about it, what's really lovely about it, is people will start to say to you, you've had a good night? What were you
had
a
what
good
have you
night last
to?
Night? What
it's
you?
My birthday.
Right. Or I'm just feeling, I call it dialing up your fizzy. So
okay.
just dial up a bit of fizzy. So
E is energy. All right.
L is laughter.
Okay.
We don't laugh.
We've
enough,
laughed in
Adam.
This,
We've
right?
laughed.
I know.
But we don't, as a rule, we don't laugh enough. Under laughter also
Especially
sits.
As you get older.
Right.
That belly aching. When was the last time anyone bellyache laughed where you actually it was hurting so much?
Yeah, me last night. And
okay.
also I do it a lot. Last night I was out with two of my closest friends.
Yep.
And we're basically like we're three like pretty successful grown-ass women, and also we're three utter wally brains.
Right.
And it is brilliant. I just love it. And I think like, so find your wally brains,
okay.
hang out
find
with the idiots,
brain,
find those people, go out with those people that, you know, when you go to on a stag do or a hen do, and it will probably invariably be people from college or school,
yeah.
and you'll like be sitting on the train coming home and you'll be like, oh man, my cheeks are hurting, I've never laughed so much. Like,
so find
it's
those people.
People.
Okay,
right?
So L for laughter.
Laughter,
okay.
But also be aware of consumption as well. So it's listen to funny podcasts, listen to funny stuff, listen to good things, watch good things.
Like this episode.
Like this hilarious episode. Just saying. A is access the creative
right.
part of who you are. We are all born these like beautiful, consummate, creative, wonderful
yeah.
human beings. And then because we live in a capitalist society, at some point, probably someone told us that we can't earn money out of doing that thing, painting
right.
or sculpting or singing or whatever. And
get
so
a real job was the advice. That,
right,
yeah.
exactly.
Okay.
Or as my career is, have you thought of admin, Donna? Didn't know where else to put me. Where else? No, just like, ugh.
That's the end of that conversation, really, isn't it?
Exactly.
Okay.
And so access the creative part. You whack some paint on some paper. Do something that connects your body and mind. I've signed up for a kintsugi course. Do you know what that is?
No. What's that?
You know that Japanese art where if you break a vase and then you reassemble it? Have you heard this?
No.
It's so beautiful. Please, please look it up.
Kintsugi.
Yeah. Okay. So basically, it's a Japanese art where if you break a vase and it's cracked and then you put it together, but instead of like we would put it together or you know, our parents would like if they were trying to fix a vase, you'd get that like invisible glue stuff.
Yeah.
They do it with this like incredible like gold paint so you can see the cracks in the vase. And the message and the beauty behind it is that they're showcasing imperfection as opposed to hiding imperfection because
they're
showing the beauty of imperfection.
And it becomes
something
else.
And it becomes something beautiful. I'm doing a course in that. So yeah, sorry, that's just on a tangent about doing creative stuff. So ELAT, try new things. Do new stuff. But trying new things doesn't necessarily mean going and doing a new course, doing a new, like running off and joining the circus.
Right.
It's
an option.
I mean, do it if that fills your boots. But this is stuff like talking to people that you haven't spoken to before, trying food that you haven't spoken to before.
Yeah.
Watch a channel. Watch like Sky Arts if you've never watched it before. Just like try new things because our brains adore these well-trodden neural pathways that take us to work every morning and get us there and we have no idea how we've got here. But what happens is we when we do new things, we activate what I like to call this like tourist mode. We're we go off piece, right? Our brains go off piece.
That's why I like travelling so much.
That's why everyone likes travelling.
Because you think then you really are in tourist mode. But
and what do you think about what I love about being abroad? What's your favourite place abroad? I'll tell you mine in a second. And I don't mean an actual place itself. I mean, so anywhere you go, what do you love doing? I think I've asked the question in such a bad way. So basically what I was going to say was I love supermarkets.
That wasn't probably going to be my first response, but let's go with it.
You know when you're like, oh, look at this. They even like, look how their milk, they do their milk. Look how they, I mean, look at
when you
crisps.
Mentioned it,
though,
you it's do see some wonderful things, don't you,
don't
which you just
you
don't
just?
Get back
right.
home.
And so try new things.
Okay.
Do
All right.
things that are a bit different that shake up our brain.
Gotcha.
E, the second E is exist in the now. But my exist in the now, we spoke about the happiness, there-ness and back-there-ness. My exist in the now is existing in the now with a sense of wonderment.
Right.
So activating this wonderment that I spoke about at the beginning, which is about this kind of looking around us and just going like, oh,
look at this studio.
This is pretty cool.
Pretty lights. Cameras.
It's almost like, dare I say, you know that if you were to do an impression of somebody who was stoned and they're like, yo man, like look, everything looks so cool. Yeah. Like it's a little bit of that, right? It's like or it's activating
a permanent state of wonderment.
Right. Or it's activating the wide-eyed kid in us.
Yeah.
Why? This is cool. Like, why do we do that? Why do they do that? Like all of this kind of this wonderment about life that suddenly people are going to be listening to this and here we are being able to share this stuff, right?
Okay.
It's wonderful. And the last D is do you. And do you in a way that is kick-ass, man. Do you in a way that is beautiful and understand that your value is your value wherever you are in this journey right now.
You have to hold that, dear,
before,
don't you?
Not before you lose 2 stone, not before you get the promotion,
right now,
whether you're the extrovert that's bringing in thousands for the business or the introvert who's diligently like buried away in the design studio with their headphones in, like the validity of everybody that make up not only in part of an organization, but part of this human race. The validity of all of us is magic. It's just remember that we're made of goddamn stardust, my friend. And if we remember that, we walk out of our front doors like a freaking rock star, not like a me. There's a difference. We come out like, yeah, and we walk in. And so then we are unknocker-overable, because if we know we're made of this stuff.
I still love that word, unknocker-overable. It's great,
totally
isn't it?
Totally made.
You heard it here first.
I'm obsessed with making up bloody words. It's ridiculous.
It's great.
But so that accessing this rock starness of self, regardless of who we are and where we are in our journey, is the last one.
We've only just skimmed the surface. How do people get in touch with you, Donna?
So I am, my business is Joyology. My brand is Joyology. So if you go to joyology.co.uk, you'll find me there. And if you put Donna Easton, Joyologist, in the internet, you'll find me.
And so, all over LinkedIn.
And all over LinkedIn.
I can put all of those in the show notes.
Beautiful.
Have you had fun?
So much fun.
Are you full of joy
always,
as a result of this episode?
But honestly, my joy barometer has risen today. Thank you, Adam.
And I just want to ask one thing. This is something that you're doing a lot of work with corporates, aren't you?
Yeah.
People are starting to understand this is important. Give us some feedback or some examples that you've got about just how people are starting to understand this is important to a thriving business.
Well, some research done a few years ago said that happier people were 17% more productive.
Right.
You or I don't have to do a bunch of research to see when a team is flying and when a team is plodding, right? We've seen that. And so if we come at happiness with a total authenticity and an understanding that business is going to dip up, and how do we cultivate more of this former state of electricity and of human beingness, human connection, where we support each other, love each other, we've got each other's backs, and we enjoy going into work, and we're loving what we're doing.
Mm.
God, like, that sounds like a brilliant place to work, right? We're creating something. We're all purpose-led. This mission that we're all on just feels beautiful. And how do we protect ourselves from these moments of energy that are going to dip, right? And so,
which, as we say, is inevitable. That is life as well.
Absolutely. Yeah. And so it's about cultivating more of that former. And how do we do that as a team? And that's what I do. So I go into businesses and help with accessing that, with accessing a happier way of working and a happier way of life.
Well, carry on bringing joy to as many people as possible. Thanks. I just want to say a massive thank you for taking the time to come into the studio on The Leadership Enigma. Joyology, you heard it here. Thanks very much indeed.
Thank you.
Join us again next week for more curiosity and insight with The Leadership Enigma. We'd love to hear your comments on today's show, as well as suggestions for future topics and guests. Get in touch with me on LinkedIn or visit us at www.leadersenigma.com. Don't forget to rate, review and subscribe on all your major podcast platforms and on our dedicated YouTube channel. Thanks again for joining the community.